Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing, sponsor of the annual customer seminars. This virtual or in-person program will provide tools for the demands and challenges of managing a farm business in today's environment, along with updates on the latest federal and private crop insurance products and new program ECO, Enhanced Coverage Option.
This is the February 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Bloomington Normal, Illinois. Wayne Nelson is with us from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Carl Setzer joins us from AgriVisor. They're headquartered in Bloomington. And Mike Zuzlow is at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Medium. Find us online. Listen to us anytime you'd like on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's get a list of items that we should discuss for the day. I think, Kurt Kimmel, we'll start with you. What's on your list today?
Well, just rebounding a lot of questions. A lot of good conversation here this winter on the deals and sharing thoughts. But one thing is energy. Do I need to go ahead and be booking some energy in through here? But the main question is, what do we do? That's a big topic here. What strategy here do we look at going into this spring?
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
You know, we've got a lot of stuff booked, or China has a lot of stuff booked. Will we see cancellations coming up in the next week or two?
Carl Setzer.
I think we're going to, my perspective is what we'll see on acres and whether or not a push at this time of the year does us any good.
And finally, Mike Zuzlow.
Kind of bouncing off all the other three, Todd, I kind of feel like we've really spun a lot of tire and a lot of rubber's been burned and we've really done nothing the month of February, at least the first half. Is this going to change here as we get into the second half or not?
So that has some interesting functions to it as it's related to crop insurance, because volatility at the end of the month, the last five trading days of the month, that'll be next week, Mike, will make a difference in what the price of crop insurance does. The more volatile it is, the higher the price is going to be, and it has a pretty large impact. What are your thoughts on the volatility for next week?
Well, it's going to be hard to change the 450 and 1160 base price without a lot of volatility, because we really have kind of settled into a pretty wide range, but that seems to be kind of the medium and the average at this point, and we've only got about less than half the month left. Now we've got USDA, the acreage base came out this morning from the chief economist, and the trade realizes that it's going to be very hard to build any ending stocks in soybeans. It's going to be very hard to maybe build more than maybe 300 million bushels of stocks in corn if we can keep the same demand base that we had this previous marketing year. Having said that, though, this is not January, this is February, and we've got Brazil starting to harvest. And we've got prices starting to show that. The U.S. corn price is around $2.50 a ton. South America is around $2.45 to $2.50. Soybeans in the United States Gulf around $5.40 a ton. South America is around $5.10 to $5.13. So what we're looking at, I think, here, Todd, right now could be if we don't get any fresh USDA Ag Forum numbers on Friday that really change the dynamic one way or the other. If we don't see the soy meal and the wheat come in here and catch and see some short covering, I do think that we're probably going to start eroding and start leaking a little bit more as the month of February finishes out.
Carl Setzer from AgriVisor USDA this week has been holding its ag form. We've seen some acreage figures from them. We saw prices for the coming year in their numbers today, 420 on the season's average price for corn for new crop, and for soybeans, $11.25, wheat at $5.50. Given the acreage and the price that they're projecting, what do you think they might or might not do with the demand side?
You know, from the demand side, I think we're going to sit and look at, you know, the ethanol. I think we've peaked out on ethanol as far as capacity. You know, there's some talk that we're going to see some rebounding. But, you know, I think we have to get the COVID a little bit further under control. I think it's going to take a while there. Our feed demand, I think, is going to, in my opinion, going to hold steady. You know, our livestock numbers are holding there pretty good, but there again, you know, you look at the placements, you look at the number of cattle we get on feed, we can only push so much through those animals. Exports, if we see an increase in demand, I believe it comes from the export side. You know, there's some questions on that Safrina crop, questions on the Argentine, you know, not necessarily their production, but whether or not they'll make exports with their taxes. A lot of unknown there. And in that Black Sea, you know, a little bit of uncertainty there as well. You throw that all together, and I'm a believer that our exports perk up a little bit. You know, can we top this year? That's going to be a big question. We got to look at where, you know, our sales have been good on corn, but our loadings are you know, a little bit less than desired. Every time we get a little bit of a bump, they set back. So if I had to make a demand estimate change, I think it comes on corn and it comes through exports. Soybeans, you know, any increase to demand right now is too much. Crush is pretty much pegged out. You know, I think our soybean demand is dictated by what we see in that South American crop. Not necessarily the size, but we're going to see delays to their exports, not much coming out in February. March and April, I expect to see record exports out of Brazil. How long of a tail that crop has will be the deciding factor on the backside if we see a little bit demand before we get to our harvest season.
So on all of that, Kurt, I was thinking about the exports. I think 2.266 billion bushels have been booked for export. However, as Carl rightfully showed, not a lot of that has been shipped, something like 850 million bushels. Are we concerned that the Chinese will come in and cancel some of those biggest ever export bookings they have on at this time?
Well, it's always possible, but I think we've got a few weeks yet before that shows up. There was some slight cancellation in corn. I don't know if that was just a play to make the market go lower so they could book some more lower or not. But the U.S. is out of beans. I mean, demand's peaked out. You know, when you start talking to these livestock guys, there's concerns about meal here this summer. I don't know if we'll get in a situation last time where it was rumored. It does not necessarily happen where if you want meal, you had to take beans in, and there's a trade-off there. So, you know, things are pretty well maxed out there, and I don't think they want to give up that ownership just yet until they get their shipping more in line down that southern hemisphere, make sure everything goes fairly smooth. So, yeah, demand's been a dominant factor here. I think everybody's where they want to be right now. So it's a matter of using these supplies up that's been booked here short term and see where we are 30 to 45 days from now.
Wayne, are we concerned about the Chinese on the soybean side of the export market?
Yeah, I think we really are. I think there's a couple things going on. You know, we're moving up to 30, 40% done in Mato Grosso, and they're starting to get enough beans and get moved into position, and they're 30 or 40 cents under us as far as things go like that. We've got a real feeling that we think they could be double booked for this time period just to make sure they had something to ship. And there's a lot of rumors going around. I heard them two or three times today was that they thought there'd be some cancellations of some of the bean shipments. Now, nothing factual, just people talking and going on like that. But it's not unusual from double booking that one time period. Now, that doesn't mean there'd be cancellations. They might be pushed down the road, they might be pushed into new crop, or they might be pushed for a little later shipment. But I think it was Kurt or something was talking about, you know, there was talk that we could actually just about import beans at what the difference in price is right now, and they'd probably go to the East Coast as to come on in and do that. They could process them there in the large chicken feed areas. So, you know, it wouldn't maybe be the worst thing to not have to bring in Brazilian beans and to just keep ours here and not buy theirs.
Carl, what are you advising people as it relates to the cash grain market?
You know, I'm looking at, and the old crop were pretty well sold out. 2021 crop or 2020 crop were pretty well sold out on that. You know, anything remaining, you look at the market and, you know, to hold cash grain into an inverse, you know, just doesn't pan out. So I guess you look at, you know, if you want to hold on to inventory now, you really got to make your opinion on how long you're going to hold it. And you know, maybe put a stop in place, if nothing else. 2021 crop, you know, looking out to next fall, you look at where the USDA is projecting for average cash prices and what we've got, you know, maybe we need to look at start layering in some sales out there, especially on your, you know, anything that you're not going to, you know, plan on insuring. And I'm even, you know, advising guys, and it's hard to convince a farmer of this, but look at 2022, and I realize, you know, soybeans, when you try pointing out to November 22 soybeans, $3 less than they are now. But when you look at the historical averages, you know, 1075 futures, if they're the worst you lock in for the year, and you know, don't go crazy on it, but layer in a little bit, and again, on your uninsured stuff, might not be the worst thing. You know, there's a lot of, you know, the concern in the country market always is, well, what if I make a sale and futures rally? Well, that's always a possibility, and that's why you scale in your sales. But I'm kind of warning guys, you know, there's a lot of what ifs in this market. Like we just talked about, what if cancellations take place? What if that South American crop continues to get bigger? What if our demand isn't quite as good? You know, to lock in some downside protection right now, I think is a little bit more, I'd be a little bit more, you know, inclined to do that, especially where the market sits, than worrying about locking in your upside risk.
Hey, Mike Suzalo, speaking of what ifs, less than a month ago, the what if was, what if it stays really dry, and what if we keep these warm temperatures going? That changed in your area and a large part of the Midwest big time. I don't know about the dry part. Certainly, it got cold, finally, in a large part of the Midwest. But farmers really have been following the drought monitor very closely, and they're really concerned. Actually, maybe they're really optimistic. I don't know which part of it to deal with on that front, about dry weather conditions and weather premium in the marketplace. How do you talk them through dealing with those kinds of concerns that are so far out and after a couple of changes that really happen year in and year out in the seasonal weather?
Yeah, it's probably going to be a question that needs to be asked maybe three or four times in the next 6 months, Todd, because it's something we have to go back and revisit over and over again at these price levels and at this fear level. You're right. The producers are not only still, you know, kind of mentally being hammered from selling too cheap last year. And in fact, there's a great article in the Financial Times about the Chinese producer that was interviewed in this article said, I sold a lot in 2019. I'm going to hang on to more this coming year in 2020 as well, and 2021 as well. And so I think, you know, that lingers with people in the producer side, especially when they see some of the driest conditions since 2011 up until about 3 weeks ago. But I've tried to, producers that I work with, I've tried to illuminate them with the idea that, okay, there's a La Nina bull already in this price, especially for the new crop futures, that new crop's being pulled up by old crop, but there's also probably some weather premium in the new crop by itself by some La Nina bulls, both farmers that aren't selling new crop and also funds that are participating probably in the back end futures, thinking that may be the cheapest place to go into given the inflationary pressure and given if we have another weather market. I think that's fine to talk about, and it's fine to build it into your marketing plan, but I just simply am saying to everybody I work with, don't count on another bad crop year for the weather to, in the supply side, to bring you another high price or a higher high than what we got to this past year. Just don't count on it. We can always plan around it. And that's where it goes back to that sell and defend model that I think, you know, it does work. Does it cost some money? Yes, it does. But it does give you both sides of the market for a period of time that you can navigate through these kind of uncertainties that we're talking about. So I think that's my best answer, because that's what's worked since I started. You know, all these guys that I'm talking with today have been in these markets a long, long time. I'm probably the young guy at 26 years of being in these markets, but for me, I don't know very many analysts and I don't know very many producers that can sell on the way down, because you just get locked up and it's like catching a falling knife. So I know myself, and the recommendations I make are best when it's going higher, and that's kind of how I work it.
Hey, one of the things that along with what Mike's talking about there, I think that it is good to lock in bottoms some of these, but I do think you want to be very careful with some of the grain companies. They love to have you buy a put and sell two calls that you maybe double up on what you're selling to pay for it. And I'm going to, with the weather possibilities that we've heard from two or three weather people, that is the possibility of dryness. I mean, not the assuredness, but the possibility of dryness coming through. Do a one-to-one and maybe pay a little bit out of your pocket rather than, okay, here we take off. I mean, we got a lot of people I know that with the grain companies did this year, we thought anything over $10 for a long time was going to be tremendous for beans. And a lot of them doubled up their sales because they sold two $10 calls to buy their one put. So we like the one-to-one if they're going to do that rather than the buy one, sell two to pay for it.
Wayne, I'll ask you a crop insurance question as well, because I'm fairly certain, though if you listen to them long enough, you'll probably hear both sides of this. And there will be another crop insurance webinar from Gary Schnittke and company here on campus, not this coming Thursday, but the following one. You can find details at willag.org for the whole series. In that, they talk about ECO some. I'm wondering whether producers are taken aback by kind of the sticker shock of crop insurance at 80 or 85%, and then the ECO, which is expensive, putting a whole lot of cash on top of that to get to 90 or 95%. And whether what Gary and crew talk about is you're covering a lot of income, and at a really high price, and it may very well be worth doing. Have you been talking through that with a lot of farmers, and how do they view it?
A lot of them are, like you said, the sticker shock is really hitting home, and you have to remember when you put your rough numbers now, which we don't have the final numbers to give them, but you take your rough numbers and look at what just their 85% policy is going to cost quite a bit more because of the volatility factor that's in there right now, Todd, and then you add on the cost of the other to go on up there. And let's remember, if we do have a good year, that doesn't mean that you are going to collect on your insurance. It just might mean that your insurance bill is higher. I'm not saying we shouldn't be taking it or whatever, but I mean, it's going to be a very big decision for a lot of guys if they want to kick out the kind of money for insurance that talks about. But it would be pretty much ensuring that they can, you know, come out with a profit at the end of the year no matter what. It's just whether sometimes it's awful hard to pry the farmer's wallet out of his back pocket.
Yeah, we're talking about going from $16, $18, $20 to $38, $54, depending on where.
Yeah. I was going to say a lot of them, when you put the two together with the volatility factor this year, are going to be well over $50 an acre.
Yeah. Well, I was at 38 on just the RP. Right. It's a big number.
And like I say, in some cases that could be stretching closer to 70, 75. And that is an awful hard figure to look at. And another thing, have they booked in their fuel needs and have they booked in their fertilizer needs? If you looked at what fertilizer's done this last week and what fuel's doing to them, that's going to be putting that other $30, $40 an acre on their added cost too.
Yeah, on that note, Kurt, you may as well jump in because you wanted to talk about booking fuel.
Yeah, I had a short conversation with our good friend down in Waco, Texas here this week, and basically it's kind of an example of who would have thought the windmills, the green movement, would have froze up and the power would go off and the oil wells, the oil.
You know full well the windmills don't freeze, at least if they're equipped properly.
If oil wells froze up, it's a mess. And a lot of those fuel supplies were just short term. You know, everything's so close, don't need to have more than a day's inventory, and all of a sudden we got caught short. But with, you know, concerns about the administration and some policy down the road, there's concern that this we're going to see the fuel creep higher in through here, and I think the risk is to the upside here as we move forward. Complete reverse 180 from over a year ago, where energy values, crude oil particularly, traded negative. So any type of pullback in here, I think you got to get to where you need to be and lock that in.
Anything to add, Carl, to this discussion about crop insurance or locking in prices for crude or your energy needs going forward?
Not really. I guess one thing, I would add, and this is, to everything that's been said, don't market next year's crop based off what took place this year, because even if it's similar, it's going to be different. And trying to market two crop years off, trying to mark 2 years off 1 year's fundamental, is it can be pretty costly in the long run.
Well, and one other thing too, Todd, real briefly, is the USDA's acreage number of 92 million. I'm not going to fight that in terms of corn acreage that they put out this morning, but all of what we're talking about today is probably not been factored into USDA's estimate. And so if energy prices keep going up, chemicals keep going up, fertilizer keeps going up, and we stay cold through the month of March, you got to start thinking, I think, at this stage of the game, that 92 is probably on the top end. Maybe it'll stretch to 92.5, but 92 is probably on the top end. So not to sound like a repeat, but it is kind of a repeat. I still think at the end of the day, heading into 2021, the soybeans have a premium that the corn maybe doesn't have in it right now in terms of a futures premium. And I say that with the fear that Carl and what he talked about with the ethanol is going to be upon us very, very soon. And USDA even acknowledged that in their baseline update earlier this week that was done back in October. And the chief economist, I think, mentioned it again this morning that we're not going to get back to pre-COVID levels in terms of ethanol consumption at this point, for a variety of reasons. And I think we do have to bake that into our cake as far as how we analyze the corn market. But acreage base, I think 92 million is rich, given how expensive it is going to be to plant corn this year.
Yeah, that looked at flat to declining, I think, for ethanol and for export market for corn, although the feed and residual number was increasing.
The one thing I would like to say is that I have been talking to seed corn dealers and asking them how, if they're changing, the farmers are changing their orders. In seed corn, they're out on their second or third call on the guys and seeing what they're thinking at now. And they are not changing their mixture, at least in, a 200-mile radius of me here that way. They're still ordering the same percentage of corn acres and bean acres as seed for right now as they did for last year. So we're not seeing a change or any acres being bought away from the other one here and through good central Indiana and parts into central Illinois and Ohio.
Does that surprise you, Carl? Because the long-term soybean corn ratio break even is 2.3 as presented by the University of Illinois today, but we're closer to 2.6 at this point, and it clearly points to putting more soybeans in the ground.
If you look at strictly futures prices, a 2.6 does favor soybeans. Let's look backwards here about 4 or 5 months and look at the fall we had, and you look at ground level with the elevators, the open fall we had, and look at how much fall applied fertilizer went on that's already committed acres to corn. I look at them and I'm thinking to myself, and I realize that I don't disagree that the cold snap we have, if this continues, it's going to alter the acres. I do think, 92 is a pretty lofty number on corn. I fully agree. I think it is. For soybeans to take acres away from corn, I think you're going to have to see that ratio get a little higher. I think you'd have to get it. And this seems, it wasn't that long ago that was out to 2.8 to 1. And even when we got there, farmers that I surveyed through our webpage, 77% said they're going to keep their same rotation Only 13% said they would plant more soybeans. That's at a 2.8-to-1 ratio. At 2.6, you're not going to see that increase. You know, farmers like to plant corn. They like to report big corn yields. You know, soybeans, they plant them for a rotation, and yes, there's demand there. But I think the ratio, we got to kind of throw that out the window a little bit at this point of the game, because, you know, a farmer buys his inputs and has them locked in as soon as the crop is harvested. By the time you get to mid-February or March 1st, the majority of your inputs are locked in. And when we have a fall like last year, like I said, a lot of them have already been applied. So to see acres shift at this point forward, or to see a positioning, the futures might make it look good. But in theory, I don't know if you're going to see much of a shift.
Well, wouldn't those beans come in the fringe areas? And so if you said, and I'll just outline this relatively speaking, if you said Toledo to Indianapolis to Springfield to Des Moines to Kearney up the Red River Valley and back to St. Paul as the primary corn, more corn than bean acres. And then outside of that area, actually, they favor soybeans. And the research shows that that's a large area that's still kind of in the Corn Belt, but on the fringe. Do you think we could see them go to a lot more soybeans?
I think we, you know, there's always a possibility there. When I see it, though, you look at where, you know, like North Dakota, you know, even into South Dakota where we saw some losses last year, I think you're going to be a little bit hard-pressed to get soybeans up there this year. You know, I'm in Michigan, and we're going to see a lot of winter wheat. And when I say a lot, you know, our winter wheat acres are up this year. And you can say, well, that was for a cover crop, and typically it would be, but a lot of that wheat has been forward contracted already. I think where a sleeper might be in acreage, and I might be way out in left field on this, but, you know, there's a lot of talk that if soybeans do remain high and we continue, you know, if we do see another trending market like we did this year, as soon as that winter wheat comes off, or, you know, there's a lot of talk of guys coming in, especially in the south and in plains where they can sneak it out and maybe put in a short soybean crop after that. That might be a sleeper area, I think, more so than the fringe on a whole.
We've asked Carl about a cash market strategy. Kurt, Wayne, and Mike, what are you thinking about for new crop strategies at this point? Kurt, I'll start with you.
Well, you know, guys hit on it a little earlier. I think you got to remove the human emotion here, and human emotion's been I sold too much too early last fall, and the market went up on us. And I think you got to kind of work off a little bit of what Mike said: the sell and defend. I'm sticking with the KISS program. Keep it simple. You know, I think it's very, very simple. You put a price floor under you. You know, make a few forward sales to get started. With that price floor, you've got the flexibility. If the market goes higher, you can scale into it as you go. You get a little further down the growing season, you're more comfortable with your bushels. You can become a little bit more aggressive. If China comes in and cancels and something blows up somewhere, man, you've got that downside protection there. So you kind of decide what type of risk manager you want to be in through here. So there's a lot of moving parts. The volatility is going to be high, so make sure you talk to one of the guys with the program and get some type of strategy in place that you've got some staying power and manage some of this risk.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp, Todd. Just a couple finer points. With 25% corn on for 2021 in terms of hedges and 55% on soybeans at this point, with some buyback, about 25% bought back and some May option call verticals, I'm in a real strong mindset that I really want to do some more business and some more hedging this month, because in 2008, we had a real strong move up heading into the end of February, and we kind of peaked for a time until we got to the springtime planting. So I'd really like to see a repeat of that. And if I do get a repeat of that, and maybe even if I don't, I'll get some puts in place for some more hedging and finish up the last 10% on 2020 corn and beans. One thing that I really got to stress at this point, I'm doing a lot more analysis on, and this goes back to the ethanol and the energy, is, and this goes back to the acreage mix and having some acreage that you're maybe questioning if you're listening to the show right now. I'm really starting to get more nervous about what will basis be in intense ethanol production parts of the Corn Belt come summer and fall. In other words, we typically like to do hitch to arrives early in the year, leave your basis open before planting. That's kind of your stopgap in case you have a bad crop locally. I'm a little bit nervous that may backfire on us if this ethanol demand doesn't come back by the time we get to planting. So I'm real nervous that the cash corn price in these ethanol areas could not be as good as we once thought it would be. And we start a new trend of that actually being one of the weaker places for corn, cash corn prices.
Yeah, I think that a lot of good points have been made here along the way. We're doing a little bit of buy a put, sell one call above it at a point where we don't mind actually being short the market. We don't want to do two, like we said before, because getting way out there, too much margin money can be called in for a short call if you're wrong. I think that we do want to get the 10 to 15% sold here before we go to the field to cover our 15% that's not covered by crop insurance, Todd, that way, looking at it. I think that some cash sales wouldn't be terrible. I know that in a lot of areas, the basis levels are still very good for fall prices, and especially if you think you can get some early shipment stuff in and done that way. You know, but as we look at this, as far as going short, there was an old trader that wrote once that never sell a low volume break in a bull market. And we're definitely been in a bull market here for the last few months. So it is a little scary to just go short this market. But I do feel that there's going to be a little bit of setback here.
I'll take that as your final word for the day, too.
Yes.
Indeed. Kurt Kimmel, what's your final word for the day?
Well, we're probably still in the early phase of this super cycle in through here. So I believe you're going to have the acres. Who wants to miss out on not trying to get some type of corn and beans in the ground here? So once again, we're going to have a lot of moving parts, a lot of volatility, a lot of weather to go through in through here. And I think it's prudent to have some type of risk management plan this year of all years.
Mike?
Just the biggest thing that I see right now, Todd, is the meal prices. I think that's one of your best indicators right now. Usually it's wheat, but I think it's meal, because if we're so tight on beans, and if South America is short on beans, we should have this cash meal price come in and start supporting the meal price at the board. And so that 417.60 low from January, I just do not want to take that out, because that would really change the dynamic of the charts, and I think change the dynamic of the fundamentals.
And a final word from you as well, Carl Setzer.
You know, Todd, I think if anything, like the group has said, be realistic, but more importantly, market for your operation and market for the market you currently have, not the market you want or not the market that you hope you get.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website, WILLAG.org. We'd like to thank our panelists for the day. They include Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities, Carl Setzer of AgriVisor, and Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.